everyone this evening. Glad you all could be with us. We're chapter 9, 10, 11, in that area of Genesis. I want to go back just a bit and mention a couple of things I didn't mention last week when we were talking about Ham's sin, whatever that was. One of the prevailing opinions, and again, it's the opinion is because it's basically reading between the lines. What the scriptures actually say, what they mean, and based on traditions and those kinds of things. One of the ideas is that Ham was endeavoring to show at least some dominance. Now, whether this was an act of taking over from Noah being the patriarch of the family, or whether it was usurping the position of his other brothers. Now, Ham, by most experts, is considered the youngest, even though the scriptures don't really say. In fact, there's some bit of controversy as to which of the other two were older, but Ham, in most cases, is presented as the younger of the three, youngest of the three. And it may have been an effort to supplant his father or to show dominance over his brothers. And if this were the case, we've got a couple of other illustrations in the scriptures of this very, very thing happening. In Genesis chapter 49, Reuben is mentioned as having had sexual relations with Bilhah, who was one of Jacob's wives. And because of that, his birthright as being the firstborn son was taken away from him. And given later on, we know, to Joseph, and he was given the double measure of the inheritance. Also, the same thing happened with Absalom and David. In 2 Samuel chapter 16, Absalom took all of David's concubines up on the rooftop so that all the city could see what he was doing. And then one other instance, Abner did the same thing with some of Saul's wives after the death of Saul to usurp the sons of Saul that would have been in line for the kingdom. And so just wanted to add that to some of the evidence that there was something, some kind of sexual relationship going on there. One other thing that I thought was also interesting was that Noah did not produce any more children. Now, at that day and time, it would have not been impossible for him, even though he was 600 years old. We do have many others in those days and times of having children at that, what we would call an advanced age. To them, it really wasn't. And so that was one of the puzzling things about why there were no more descendants of Noah other than his three sons. Because they were all given that same command by God when they came out of the ark to go forth, multiply, and fill the earth was their command. And so he didn't produce any more children. And, you know, there is at least some question as to why. Yes. That's the predominant theory among Bible scholars, is that Canaan was the result of this relationship or this union of Ham and Noah's wife. And again, whether that was actually Ham's mother or whether she was another wife of Noah, we don't know that. We're not told specifically that he had any more than one wife. Anyway, that is the common idea at this time. Anybody have any other question or comment about that before we move on? What are you saying that was the reason for the curse? Right. That's true, and that's one of the things that gives some weight to this idea, is that the only one that's mentioned is Arphaxad as being a grandson that was born after the flood. And so Canaan would have been after that probably, and that was 2 years after the flood. Anyway, that's, you know, according to the so-called experts, the reason why Canaan was cursed is because he was the basically illegitimate son of Ham, and he was mentioned a couple of times specifically as being the son of Ham. One other thing that was brought up, I believe Libby mentioned it, was about the death of Ham. And I couldn't find any substantial evidence or any mention most anywhere. It doesn't say anything in the scriptures about it. The book of Jubilee doesn't say anything about it. The only thing I did find is that a place called Guliana Kugnat, Pakistan, claims to be the location of Ham's grave, and there's a plaque on it that says he lived to be 536 years old. But if you get into the background of that, it's the reason they think that that's the place is because some guy with his 14 names that I'm not even going to try to pronounce had a vision, and it was revealed to him that was Ham's grave. I think that was in 1891 or something like that. So that was the only reference I found to actually the death of Ham, how long he lived, or anything of that nature. One thing I did come across, and I thought was interesting, was that up until fairly recently, the Latter-day Saints would not allow a black person to have any position of authority in the Mormon Church. And the reason being that Joseph Smith and his revelation was told that that was part of the curse of Ham, that the black races were to be in subjection and never be in a position of leadership. But as man-made religions do, a number of years ago, during the 20th century, whoever was the leader at that time also had a vision. And his vision was, well, it's okay now to have a black man in a leadership role. And so now there can be black elders in the in that church. But that's one of the things that happens, and we see it all the time with a lot of these other denominations. They'll will be against something until somebody gets to squawking about it, and then, oh yeah, okay, that'll be all right if we change that and change the other. So I think we're in good shape just sticking with what the scriptures say. One thing I did want to pass on to you comes from the book of Jubilee. We've seen this picture several times of the mountains of Ararat. And in Jubilee chapter 7, verses 10 through 16, we have this parallel story. And Noah woke from his sleep and knew all that his younger son had done unto him. And he cursed his son and said, "Cursed be Canaan, an enslaved servant shall he be unto his brethren." And he blessed Shem and said, "Blessed be the Lord God of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. God shall enlarge Japheth, and God shall dwell in the dwelling of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant." And Ham knew that his father had cursed his younger son, and he was displeased that he had cursed his son, and he parted from his father, he and his sons with him, Cush and Mizraim and Put and Canaan, and he built for himself a city and called its name after the name of his wife, Nealamatuk. And right here, one of the reasons I think that Ham was trying to usurp his brothers was after whatever he did to to Noah, he came out and bragged about it. Now, the scriptures don't necessarily say that, but again, reading sort of between the lines, that appears to be what happened. He did tell them, and I figure he probably bragged about it to just, again, show what a big man I am. But apparently there was sibling rivalry among those boys, probably most all their lives, because Ham got mad and took his sons and went off and built a city and named it after his wife. And then, continuing, this is in verse 15 of Jubilee 7, "And Japheth saw it and became envious of his brother, and he too built for himself a city, and he called its name after the name of his wife, Eta-Tanases. And Shem dwelt with his father Noah, and he built a city close to his father on the mountain. And he too called its name after the name of his wife, Sideki-Telebab. So there was apparently some sibling rivalry going on there, and the first division of peoples took place there, apparently stemming from this this event, whatever that is. Then chapter 10 goes into the descendants, the sons, and who begat whom, and all of this kind of stuff, and where they went, and obviously everybody is not mentioned, just some few. And we saw these slides last week. This is those are Shem's five sons, and some of the peoples that descended from them. Notice Arphaxad there at the bottom is the one through which the Jews came. Then Japheth, his name, Shem, actually means dusky in the Hebrew language. Japheth's name, again in Hebrew, means fair or light. Could mean fair or beautiful. You'll notice that those, his descendants, are the biggest bunch. Now, he did have seven sons, but they became the largest group of descendants, and most of the world is descended from them. You see all the different nationalities there. Now, what happened probably is that Shem stayed in the Mediterranean region near where the ark landed. Ham and his descendants, all except Canaan, moved south and inhabited Africa. And then Japheth basically populated the rest of the world, going up through Europe, over into Asia, across the land bridge into the Americas, and then all the way down to South America. All of those peoples apparently descended from Japheth. And I'm going to do some more research on it, but one thing I did find not too awful long ago, Marilyn and I had our DNA done, you know, the cheek swab thing, and find out where our ancestors came from and that kind of thing. And I was doing some reading online, and one of the things that has been discovered through all of this DNA research is there are basically three female strains that most people come from, and that can be traced, you know, as far back as you want to go. And this has to do with mitochondrial DNA and things of that nature. But anyway, I thought it was right interesting that that's the case. So using modern-day techniques, DNA can be traced, and the relationships can be determined based on the what we refer to as the genetic code, the way the DNA is arranged. And then those are the sons of Ham, and all of them except Canaan went south. Now, Canaan basically squatted on some of Shem's territory that had been given to him, and became the ancestor of all of the Canaanite people. That's the reason why it's called Canaan. And all of those people that are mentioned so many times as being enemies of the Jews, or enemies of the Israelite nation, are descendants of Canaan. And they are the ones who were eventually destroyed and were run out. And if they were not run out, they were put under subjection or became servants or slaves to the Israelites. So all of those prophecies we see coming true. And that basically is chapter 10. I don't intend to bore you with reading all of those names and all of that. Just suffice these three slides here to show you how the populations were spread out. In chapter 11, well, first, anybody have any question about these sons and their descendants before we move on out of chapter 10? In chapter 11, we have another fairly significant event that occurred. This map gives you an idea of where most of the things are located in this particular area. What's shown here is basically where almost all the Old Testament occurs. Over here from Egypt, across Sinai, this would be Israel or Canaan. And then over here is Babylon or Assyria. And then up in this area is what later is referred to as Asia Minor. That's Turkey today. And this area right in there is Armenia. The Ararat Mountains are there on the border. If you go on up, Ukraine is right up there, where Mark has been a number of times. And then this area is also referred to as Shinar. And then Ur of the Chaldees is right down here. That's where Abraham came from. So this map basically gives you an idea of how all of that world is related. Later on in the New Testament, we've got Jerusalem right down here, and then on up to Antioch up in this area, and then this is referred to as Asia Minor or Galatia, and then Greece over here, and then a little bit farther over is Rome, where Paul eventually ended up. So the Israelite nation, beginning with Abraham, he's going to start down here, and he's going to end up here in Haran, and then he's going to come down and settle over here in Canaan. And then this was all preceded by what we refer to as the Tower of Babel, which was probably somewhere up in that area. There are areas that say that that's the Tower of Babel. That's supposed to be the remains of it. I don't think it is. It's not big enough. I don't think God would have been concerned if the people began building some kind of tower and got up even maybe 100 feet in the air, which would have probably been a pretty big building for that time and for the kind of technology that they may have had, thinking that as most projects of man, eventually is going to get tired of it and is going to quit building. But God was concerned about it. Now, in chapter 11, we're told that everybody spoke the same language, even though they didn't maybe get along real well, as being descendants of Shem, Japheth, and Ham. But they all did speak the same language. They came from the same parents, and therefore they would have some of the same customs and all of that. Well, sometime later on, and this sometime later is probably less than 100 years after the flood, that the Tower of Babel was constructed. And about then, what brought all of this on was a desire of the people to keep in contact with each other. Now, I don't know where they thought, well, let's build this big tall tower and then we can see it from anywhere. Now, remember, they didn't really have any idea of how big the earth was at that time. Now, I'm told, you engineers and all in the audience can probably give more factual information, but to get up enough to see the curvature of the earth, it's a number of miles up that you have to go. You can't just go up several hundred feet and see the curvature of the earth. Now, obviously, from the space station and things like that, where we have men have been and can look back and see the earth there, we know the shape of it. But at that time, they really had no concept as to how big it was. So I feel fairly confident that what they were thinking was, if we can build this tower high enough that everybody can see it, it won't matter anywhere in the world we go, we'll know where home is. And so they would keep in contact with each other, maybe through some kind of festival day or some feast or something of that nature. But that wasn't God's plan. He didn't tell them to go to Shinar and everybody stay there and pitch your tents and just make one great big city. That wasn't his intent. He wanted them to go out and to populate the earth. But they decided there in the first few verses of chapter 11 that they were going to build this city and build the tower, and that was going to be the focal point for their civilization, which, of course, is just opposite of what God told them in Genesis chapter 9, where they came out of the ark, and God blessed Noah and his sons, and he said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." Not just fill Shinar, not just fill the plains around Ararat, but fill the earth. And so they took to building this tower. Jubilee gives us a little bit better glimpse as to the size and the complexity and that kind of thing. According to Jubilee chapter 10, verses 21 and 22, it took 43 years to build this tower. And that's pretty long time to be building one structure. And it would have been approximately 1645 to 1688. Remember, the flood was in 1556. So about 90 years or so after the flood, for the next 40 years or so, they were building on this tower. Now, again, this is Jubilee speaking here. It was 5,433 cubits high. Now, that's about a mile and a half, and that's a pretty tall building. It was the terms that it uses is the Greek word stadia, which is a measure of an arena, and it was about 157 meters, a little bit bigger than a football field, well, about a football field and a half, more closer to a regulation soccer field, I guess. But according to that, it was 1.3 miles by 2.8 miles, the base of it was. And it would have, you know, to have supported a tower that size, it would have had to have been pretty big. So, now again, we're basing that on uninspired writings. But to me, that would make a lot more sense to have something of that size as opposed to whatever that is in the picture there. This one other thing that maybe I'm reading too much into it, but one thing I think God might not have been pleased with, verse 6 in Genesis says, "The Lord said, Behold, they are one people, and they all have the same language. And this is what they began to do. And now nothing which they propose to do will be impossible for them." So it was not his intent for them to remain together. And it just sort of, you know, it sets up mob rule is one way of looking at that. And so he didn't want that at all. In verse 7 he says, "Come, let us go down and there confuse their language so that they will not understand one another's speech." Now, to build something of this magnitude, it's going to take a lot of coordination. You've got to move the materials, and it's a lot of materials to move. You've got to, you know, get them arranged in the proper order. You've got to build them, make sure the foundation is correct. And, you know, just all kinds of things involved in building just a house, much less something of this size. And so by confusing their speech, it made it very, very difficult to coordinate. And so this would have pretty much put a put the kibosh on the whole thing. And so they just left off building. Now Jubilee says that God sent a wind and it blew the thing down, destroyed it, so that there's nothing, was nothing left of it. But anyway, verse 9 says, "The name was called Babel because there the Lord confused their language. And from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth." So from there, that's where the major division would have taken place, where Japheth and his descendants would have gone north and east, and then Ham's descendants would have gone south, and Shem's descendants would have settled in the Mediterranean area around southern Europe and northern Africa, and in that area. One thing I did come across was that the term Pharaoh, as most of us know, is just the Egyptian word for king. Ham supposedly was the father of the first Pharaoh. And again, that's only because of tradition. That's not not in the scriptures. Okay, so we'll start there about verse 10 next week.